Let's go O's. 105.7 The Fan and the more Orioles welcome you to this presentation of the Hot Stove Show.
Play ball!
This is the Hot Stove Show on the flagship station of the Baltimore Orioles. 105.7 The Fan, an hour-long look at baseball off-season transactions, player trades, deals, and the upcoming Orioles baseball season. Live from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, here's the Hot Stove Show with your host, Jim Hunter, on 105.7 The Fan.
And welcome in, everybody. Our new location, Hot Stove Baseball, is back on 105.7 The Fan. We are at the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, and we will be here, Rock and I, all the way through February 22nd, which is the day before. Tim, can you help Rock get on the air here? February 22nd, right before the first spring game. And then we're going to move the show to Florida, which is going to be a lot of fun. But, back in the day, we used to do the show here. You heard of that Peter Schmuck guy? Yeah, well, he used to do the show with me, and apparently we're already having technical problems, which is very frustrating. But anyway, but we're here at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, the Orioles Grill on the second floor, and it's great to see so many fans followed us over from our old location. So here we are, and Dan Duquette is going to join us momentarily. I just saw Dan walk in, and Rock, we're going to be here every Thursday for an hour, except the week between Christmas and New Year's. So first off, how you been?
I haven't seen you
in 2 months.
I know. Now it feels like the off season is really heating up here because we're sitting next to each other. So it's been good.
Now, so far, the Hot Stove Show, they forgot to throw some coal in or however they heat the hot stove because nothing's going on. I mean,
it's gradual.
Are you surprised that here we are December 1st is tomorrow, no major deals, no major free agent signings, no major trades?
Yeah, I mean, that's Doug Fister signing with the Rangers. All of a sudden, that was like the big news. It's been kind of gradual, but I'm sure it's going to start picking up. And you know how it is this time of year. That first domino falls, then the next, and all of a sudden you get a lot of moves.
Where do you see most of the activity, in particular with the free agents? You know, the J.D. Martinez, I guess, is the top hitter, at least for power. There's some real good pitchers out there, free agent pitchers. Where do you see the early money, if you will? Because obviously teams have budgets, and they can only go so far. Where do you see the early guys? And will we see some situations, as we did last offseason, where guys will sign early just to make sure that they do, in fact, get a good deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see some guys do that. It's always about pitching first. I think you're going to get a big run on guys who are considered that the second, maybe lower tier, as opposed to the Arrietas, the Darvishes, where you might have a little bit more of a bidding war or at least patience to see how that market plays out. J.D. Martinez, I'm sure, isn't going to sign anytime soon. Apparently, he's the greatest hitter ever.
I've heard that.
So I don't think he's in any rush to get him signed. Apparently, if you look at all his numbers and the comparables, whatever, he is like the greatest hitter ever. So
all right.
We'll see how that plays out.
Well, it is tradition on the Hot Stove Show that as we kick it off in the offseason, our very first guest, the Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations, Dan Duquette, who, by the way, does not have an offseason. In fact, I think you're probably busier this time of year than you are during the year, but thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Good to be here. Good to be here with you guys. You know, my wife gave me this little plaque at home that's on the bookcase. It says there is no offseason.
You're right, and there isn't.
But anyway, that's the way it goes.
So you can remind her of that anytime she's like, well, why can't we do this or that? You're like, hey, there's never an off season.
No, when she's in the room, she turns it around.
All right, so 2 months of non-games. So you've obviously and your staff been busy at work. As you look back and reflect on 2017 and you look forward to how you want to improve the club for 2018, what are the areas that you really believe you need to focus on?
Well, that's pretty obvious. I went to the Ravens game the other day, and a couple of Ravens fans recognized me. And they said, Dan, shouldn't you be looking for pitching tonight? So that's where we're focused. You know, any good team starts on the mound, and any team that's going to compete in the American League East has to have. We're focusing our efforts on adding to our pitching staff. And I think we still have a good bullpen. Our bullpen is strong. We'll have to add to our starting pitching, some veterans as well as some depth. And then beyond that, we're going to need to add some left-handed hitting and get some balance to our lineup. Our lineup is predominantly right-handed. But if we could add a couple of left-handed bats, and I like a couple of our left-handed bats from the minors. I don't know if they'll be ready to start the season, but Mullins looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. And Santander, maybe, if he gets a little bit more seasoning, can help us. I mean, those are two young left-handed bats. But we're going to need some more veteran left-handed hitting, I think, to balance out the lineup with the great right-handed hitters we have.
All right, you mentioned the starters, and you're right, that is obvious. The starters had the highest ERA in the American League at 5.70. Obviously, you want to see that number down. You know, you don't want to tell your hitters, hey, boys, get us six runs tonight, we have a chance. Obviously, there were some inconsistencies there. But how do you go about getting the quality starters to improve the staff when you know every other team is trying to do the same thing?
Well, we're going to have to be resourceful. You know, a couple of years ago, we were in a similar position. And we end up, we added Chen. He came on to the mm-hmm. club. And then Chris Tillman developed in the minors, and he became a staple in our rotation. So we did a good job with him on the player development. Our scouts did a good job finding a pitcher like Chen we got four good years out of. And then we picked up Miguel Gonzalez out of the Mexican League. He was rehabbing from surgery. And our scouts went down there and saw him. So, you know, we had the benefit of a couple of veteran scouts in Fred Ferreira and Ray Portavant. Portavant recommended Chen, and Freddie recommended Miguel Gonzalez. And, you know, their veteran acumen helped get us back being competitive. So we're going to have to be resourceful. Again, you know, pitching can come from anywhere, and you know, the way I look at it, if you do a decent job and, you know, work at it, you know, you ought to be able to find some serviceable pitching.
We talk about the rotation. How important is it to get a left-hander in there? Because, you know, the counter-argument is, well, if you have five right-handers and they also get lefties out, who cares? But how important is it to you to have at least one left-hander?
Well, I think it's really important because if you have that solid left-handed pitcher, you know, the Yankees generally – staff their club with left-handed hitters so they can take advantage of their short porch and right field. And, you know, if you can find a good left-handed pitcher, that's a real competitive advantage. So that's on our shopping list, too. Yeah, that's a little bit harder to do, of course, but that's on our list, and I think that's a high-priority item for us.
And as far as left-handed hitters, I mean, where are the easiest fits? Because when you kind of look at the lineup right now, at least on paper, and I know a lot of different things can happen between now and opening day, it seems like it's mostly set at this point. Where would you fit, you see, a left-handed bat?
Well, I think we have opportunity at the DH position, and we're going to need Chris Davis to step up and do what we asked him to do when he signed the contract. There's any question about that, because his left-handed bat balances out our lineup, and he's going to have to come back and perform at the level that he did prior years. Not last year. Last year he didn't have a very good year, but we're going to need him to step up. And I think there's some opportunity in the outfield for a left-handed hitter and also at DH.
Now, Austin Hayes came up in September, and boy, what a rise for this young man. I mean, a year ago he was in college at Jacksonville, and you draft him in the third round. I mean, what a great pick that was. And he goes to Aberdeen, had injury-plagued year, but then you start him at Frederick this year, and he dominates the Carolina League, so you challenge him a little more. You send him to Double-A Bowie, and he began to dominate the Eastern League and then joined the Orioles, got off to a real good start. He seems to have what it would take to be an everyday player, but is he in the position where he still has to prove to you and to Buck and the staff that he is ready to assume that on a team that hopes to contend next year?
Well, I think he has all the tools. I think he has all the skills. He came to the big leagues quicker than anybody else in that draft. I think he was the first player from that draft to get to the big leagues. But, I mean, you could see his tools. I mean, here's a guy who can throw. He's an aggressive runner. He's a pretty solid base runner, and he can hit, and he's got power. Now, he doesn't have, you know, big, big power, but he's got opposite field power where he can hit the ball out the other way. And you know, to me, if you got power and you can hit it out the other way, you know, that tells me you have power. If you can't hit the ball out the opposite field, then you don't really have big league power, what, you know, what the scouts would call light tower power. But he has all the tools. Whether he needs more seasoning, I mean, maybe he does. I think pitchers, after they saw him, they saw that he was very aggressive. You know, they challenged him and they made some pitches. And so he's going to have to make an adjustment, you know, whether he's ready to do it on an everyday basis, right, when we start the season. You know, I don't know. I guess we'll find that out. But I really like his tools. I like the way he goes about it. I like the way he runs down the ball in the outfield. I like his arm. And, he should be a good contributor for us.
Well, the one thing about him that we did notice watching him for a month is he's very much like Trey Mancini in the sense that he is a foul line to foul line hitter. He's not predictable at all. If you pitch him away, he's going to go to right field. If you give him a pitch to pull, he's going to do that. And to me, that's a sign of maturity because he understands that's the better way to succeed. So projecting to opening day next year, which is in March, do you go to spring training hoping he wins the job, or do you have a side plan that just in case? Because you say maybe he will need more seasoning, but you may not know that until the middle of spring training.
Well, I think if we get a little bit more depth in our outfield, we'll have that covered. And he's really good against left-handed pitching. He hits left-handed pitching consistently, and he does some damage. He hits left-handed pitching with power. So he's got, and he can play a position in the field. So I mean, he's a pretty complete ball player. You know, if we decide to give him more at bats for experience in the minors, we can decide that in the spring. He's got the kind of skills where he should be able to develop into an everyday ball player in a big league.
All right, Dan, here it is. What would you say the odds are that Zach Britton will be on this roster on opening day?
I think they're good. I like Zach Britton. I like him on our team. There's a lot of interest in him. He's got 1 year left on his contract here. He's been one of the top pitchers in the league. I think in 2016, you can argue that he was the best pitcher in the American League. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a historic run there. And I think on ESPN, he was voted the best sinker ball out of anybody. So he's got some great skills. And, you know, clubs knew that. The club was looking at some options around the trade deadline, and there was a lot of interest in him then, but we elected to hold on to him with the team. I mean, he's got a lot of value to our team, but I understand why clubs would be interested in him. You've seen the value of elite relievers in the playoffs the last couple of years with the way Francona used Andrew Miller, and you saw how the Dodgers used Jansen there to go deep in the playoffs. So, you know, he's got a lot of value, but he's got a lot of value to our team too.
So, Dan, you would still look at it that you're in an all-in mode for 2018. Because, you know, there's going to be the debate of would it be wise with so many key guys being pending free agents, whether you could afford to keep them to make these deals now, or do you go ahead and just try and add these pieces, like you're saying, to the rotation, left-handed bat, and make another run? I think it's safe to say that you guys are in the make another run mode.
Well, I think that's what people want. We have some players whose option year is coming up in their contract. And, you know, in this market, I think for 14 years, we had a team that was not competitive, but they lost more games than they won. And when the team came back and was winning, I mean, the fans loved it. They came out and they support the club. So we still have a pretty good core group. And I got to tell you, you know, that rebuilding, that's not very much fun. I mean, you can sit here and you can talk about it, but it's not very much fun. Now, the Cubs and Houston, they lost 100 games a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And that was painful. They had a plan that they were going to lose that many games. And they leveraged that to get the top picks in the draft. And fortunately, they invested properly. I think the Cubs picked up Chris Bryant. He was one of their big picks. He ended up being the MVP of the league. And you see what the Astros did. They got Correa and McCullers in the first round. They got the third baseman Bregman, but losing 100 games to move up in the draft, that's not very much fun. And, you know, in the time that I've been here with the club, we've been drafting late, so we don't have access to that top talent. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I'd just soon draft late and have a good ball club and do as good as we can, you know, with the players that we have.
Dan Duquette is with us, our off-season debut. No off-season for him, but we are here at the Orioles Grill, second floor of the Sheraton Inner Harbor, our new home. We'll be here every Thursday from 6 to 7. Come on down and join us. Weekly food and drink specials and rock as I peruse the room. We have packed the room because of Mr. Duquette. We'll take a break. More to come on 105.7 The Fan.
Back to the Hot Stove Show on 105.7 The Fan. It's an hour-long look at baseball and the off-season trades and deals. Once again, live from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, here's Jim Hunter on The Fan.
And welcome back to Hot Stove Baseball, our off-season debut at our new location, the Orioles Grill, second floor at the Sheraton Inner Harbor. So if you planned your day around Thursdays, Rock and I will be here every Thursday up until spring training, deep into February, February 22nd, in fact, here on the second floor. Don't forget, for a limited time, the Junior Orioles Dugout Club memberships are just $20 per plan, and they make a great holiday gift for all those O's fans 14 and under, like Justin over there, our third-grade buddy who comes down to every show. Choose between two plan options and get a sneak peek at this year's club kit, which includes a backpack, a hat, a wall banner, and more. Just go to Orioles.com/dugoutclub. Jim and Rock at the Sheraton Inner Harbor. We're at the Orioles Grill. Dan Duquette, the Orioles Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations, joined us. And Dan, when you look back at last year's team, it was really a strange year. And I think it's fair to say there was some underachieving that went on. But you get off to a 22-10 start, great April, and then you have a losing May, a losing June, a losing July, turn it around in August, get back in the contention. And then it just, I don't know what happened in September, but the consistency just disappeared. Was it just one of those years where, even though you know you had quality people in place that could win games, it just didn't happen? It was just one of those years? All right, we're having some technical issues here with the equipment. And, there we go. All right, we have two mics working.
Our aim was to have a competitive team to compete, and we were in it, a couple games out going into September.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a free fall there in the month of September. But, you know, any solid team, if you're going to have a run, you've got to have better starting pitching than what we had last year. And that's the foundation of the club, and that foundation wasn't real solid. And in August, we had a couple of guys. Machado was the player of the month. I think Beckham was second or third in voting.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys had unbelievable months, and we were outscoring the opposition, which we were able to get back into the contention, getting the wild cards. But we had a couple injuries. We were counting on Chris Tillman to give us some ball games. He didn't pitch anywhere near like he pitched for us for 5 years straight. I mean, he was one of the top pitchers in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And a real weapon against the Yankees. I mean, he's got a great career record. And he had five really strong years for us. And Chris didn't have that kind of year. And he didn't do what we had hoped he was going to do, and then we didn't have Britton for a good part of the
right
year,
so. Yeah, that was a big loss.
If you lose your ace and your closer, those are the bookends of your pitching staff, if you will. That's the way I look at it. You need a good stopper to stop the losing streaks, and that's a first-class starting pitcher in your rotation. And Chris Tillman was that pitcher for us for a long time. And Zach Britton emerged as one of the great closers in the league the year before, and we didn't have him. Although we still had some pretty good guys in the bullpen, we didn't have that dominant pitcher to close out the games. And Gosman was inconsistent, and then we had Jimenez, we had Miley,
and those guys didn't do the kind of work that they had done throughout their careers. So, it was really a pitching issue for us, and primarily a starting pitching issue, which we need to address and do a better job of this year.
Now, with Chris Tillman, he won just the one game, and by coincidence, it was his very first start when he came off the disabled list, and then, as you say, he just couldn't put it together. It seems to me that he's played himself into a position of having to look for a one-year contract to rebuild his value, if you will, because going into 2017, I think it was fair to say he would have been one of the top free agents in this market had he had a Chris Tillman year, which he didn't have. Is he a pitcher you would be interested in particular, if it is just a one-year contract? Because then if he rebuilds his value, that helps the Orioles win if he reverts back to what he was in 2016.
Well, he's a free agent, and under the rules, we're not supposed to talk about any of the free agents. So I know he was one of our players and did a great job for 5 years, but it's really not kosher for me to talk about where he fits in or if he fits in with our ball club anymore because he's out there in the market. I think those decisions will, we'll sift our way through the pitchers. You know, certainly he did a great job for us for 5 years. I'm not sure we have identified exactly what the solution is for him to get him back at the form that he was previously. That's something that we worked on all year. We're still taking a look at it.
All right, now, this team has been built in this run going back to 2012 around power. And by the way, we just figured out a way to silence Rock. we stole his microphone. But built around power. And this past year, again, you had 7 different players hit at least 20 home runs, and you had 2 with Manny and Scope hitting more than 30. Now, that's good when the home runs come, and I, as much as anybody, love the fact that this team is never out of a game because of the power. And each offseason, you've talked about, it'd be nice to get a few more guys in here that can get on base maybe ahead of those home run hitters. Is that, again, a goal this offseason? You mentioned trying to get some players in here to compete for jobs and improve the depth. Are on-base percentage players part of who you're looking at?
Well, that's something that we always look at. I'm happy that we've leveraged the power that we have, and really proud of the work that Manny and Scope did. Those are 2 young kids that came up through the farm system, and they've done a great job stabilizing our lineup, playing great defense and playing ball every day. But, you hit the nail on the head. When you're talking about run production, it starts with the getting on base and getting consistent on-base capability. Really the whole lineup, they have to understand that when you take a pitch and you pass the baton to the next guy, that you're doing a good service to the club, because over the course of a long season, it's a game of attrition, right? And what happens if you take a pitch, then the other guy's got to throw more pitches, and then their pitchers have to throw more pitches. Then you got RBI opportunities for your hitters with men on base, and then they have to bring in the middle relievers, and that's when you can do some serious damage. That's when a lot of our guys hit their home runs. So it's really a whole culture that I think that we can do a better job at understanding the value of working in the strike zone. Now, when our guys work in the strike zone, we got some really dangerous hitters, and every hitter's a better hitter when they are working in the strike zone and swinging the strikes.
Okay, because we feel sorry for Rock, we're going to take a break a little early. Tim is trying to figure out why your microphone doesn't work. Or actually, it was Dan's mic that didn't work, but Rock was nice enough to hand the mic over. So we're going to take a break. We're at the Hot Stove Baseball at the Orioles Grill, second floor at the Sheraton Inner Harbor. We're going to be here every Thursday until we head to Sarasota. Come on down and join us. More to come on 105.7 The Fan.
Back to the Hot Stove Show on 105.7 The Fan. It's an hour-long look at baseball and the off-season trades and deals. Once again, live from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, here's Jim Hunter on The Fan.
And welcome back. We are back at it, our first off-season Hot Stove Show at our new location. We're at the Orioles Grill, second floor at the Sheraton Inner Harbor. Every Thursday we'll be here until we head to Sarasota for spring training, so come on out. Special guests throughout the winter and weekly food and drink specials, so we hope you can join us in a nice crowd here tonight for our off-season debut. And don't forget, you can book your Oriole Park 5-Bagger Suite Package today and enjoy a fully catered suite for 16 guests for 5 games, plus your earned priority access to opening day. Call 410-547-6173. That's 410-547-6173. Or just go online, orioles.com/5-bagger. A great way to come on out and watch your Orioles at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Visiting with Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations, Dan Duquette. And Dan, a lot of the focus, obviously, has been on the pitching. How did you think Kevin Gausman did after he turned it around? Because he got off to a slow start. And one of the things that really impressed me was his second-to-last start, which was supposed to be his last start, he really didn't pitch well in Pittsburgh. And it really upset him. And he asked and was given the ball the final day of the season, and he pitched 7 outstanding innings. And the fact that they didn't score for him, he didn't win. But do you feel that, what you saw from him last year, he is on the verge of going to the next level where you envisioned him when you drafted him?
Well, I thought he was on his way to going to the next level after his 2016 season. And when he got off to a slow start, we didn't have a solution right at the start of the season. But after he got through things, he started to come around and regain the form of a year ago. But there's nothing holding Kevin Gausman back from being one of the top pitchers in the league. He's got an excellent fastball. He has good breaking stuff. It's a little more consistent. You know, he could help himself as a fielder, I think, to turn himself into a winning pitcher, you know, a pitcher that wins a lot more games than he loses. So, you know, he's got all the equipment, and he's done some good work for us, but I'd really like to see him put it together for a whole season, because I know he has the talent to do that, and he's dedicated. He's very dedicated to training to be able to do that, and I hope this is a year where he really puts it all together.
Hi, Dan. How's it going?
Hey, who let him in?
Tomorrow night is the deadline to offer contracts or non-tender your arbitration-eligible players. You have 7 of them. Is this kind of the easiest set of decisions you've had to make? I mean, there's 7 guys that I would assume would be kind of the slam dunks for contracts.
Well, a lot of our arbitration guys are our core players, and so they'll all come back and have an impact on our ball club. So I don't think that's really an issue for our club for this year. So we have John Scope, of course, had a great year. He got some MVP votes at the end of the year.
He should have.
Yeah, exactly.
He should have won a gold glove also.
Well, you know, there's some really good players in the league. we like Johnny. He does a great job for us on defense, and I was glad to see him get that recognition. He was our player of the year and a player that's improved every single year that he's been in the big leagues with us, which is a good sign. And that's really a good reflection on him and his work ethic and, you know, his values coming out and improving all areas of his game. And he's one of the more dangerous hitters in the league. I mean, look at the size of that guy at second base. He looks like Flacco standing in the pocket there. That's how big this kid is, and what a great year he had. I took a look at Manny's year too, and that was interesting. You know, Manny hit the ball on the nose. He hit the ball harder, more consistently than any other hitter in the American League, and a lot of that statistical issue that Manny had early in the season in terms of his batting average not being very good. Well, some of that was the shift, right? They concentrated on Manny. They figured out where they would play him, you know, with the metrics. And so they took some hits away. But he was doing his job. He was hitting the ball hard. You know, Bill Thurston was my college coach, and he used to say when he was in pro ball that his goal was to hit the ball on the nose like twice a day. And Manny was doing that, but he wasn't getting rewarded for hits. And then, you know, the luck came around his way the second half of the season. A lot of the balls he was hitting hard were falling in. But you know, over the course of the season, Manny was one of the most consistent hitters in the American League. And in other years, he could have put up a lot better numbers. And I expect that he'll have that kind of year this year. I mean, he's going into his option year. He should, you know, be prepared to have a real dynamite year. And him and Scope, you know, that gives us quite a 1-2 punch right there in the middle of the diamond, in the middle of the lineup.
As long as you mention Scope, he isn't one of your pending free agents, but could you envision a scenario, if you haven't already, where you might want to open talks on an extension for him?
Yeah, I saw there were some reports out the other day about a long-term commitment by the club to Scope. Well, you know, certainly we like John Scope, and we'd love to have him for the best part of his career. And, you know, we're seeing that right now, but that's a conversation for another day. You know, we have him back for this year, and, you know, we're glad he's coming back.
You know, and along those lines, because you did bring up Manny, Manny is a pending free agent, so it's his walk year coming up. And it seems, at least by what we've read in the past, you've tried to lock him up and haven't been successful. Is that another area where you will entertain this offseason, trying to lock him up, or will you be enticed at the winter meetings because you know you're going to be asked by other clubs, hey, he's going into his walk year, would you consider trading him, and would you be able to get enough back for the 2018 team for you to justify trading him a year early as opposed to maybe he walks at the end of next year?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I know that you know, Manny's had some great years in the American League, and the combination of the defense and the hitting and the power and the arm, you know, that's a rare skill and combination. And, you know, Manny brings that to the ballpark every day, and I expect that he's going to prepare to have a great year this year. Obviously, you know, teams like him. How old is he? Was he 25, 26 years old? And he's working hard. He worked hard to get to the big leagues quickly, and we've had some great years from him, but, you know, he's on the cusp of his free agency, and I know he's going to want to have a good year. You know, the club has to decide if he's going to be a long-term fixture in our lineup in Baltimore, and I think that's a decision for the club this offseason.
And another player on the infield, I thought the Tim Beckham acquisition was fabulous. I mean, he really, in August, I mean, you can't have a better month than he had in August, and I liked his energy. Obviously, he has some challenges defensively, but one of the things that I admired with him on homestands, he would be out there at 3 in the afternoon working with Bobby Dickerson. And I really believe that with a full spring training of Bobby Dickerson and Mike Bordick working with him, that he can turn that around and become a dependable fielder. Obviously, you saw something in him because you went out and made the trade.
Well, I like Tim Beckham. I like his tools. You know, I mean, anybody that's going to be drafted 1-1 like he did and be the first player selected in the entire draft has got to have good tools. And he showed them right away when he came to the Orioles. You know, I understand why he wanted to play ball every day, because he's a ball player and he's got all the abilities to be a great player. And you know, this is his time. He leveraged the opportunity he got with the Orioles and did well. He got off to a great start. He made some really good plays for us defensively. I think if he was a little bit steadier defensively, he'd be one of the top defenders in the league because he's got a good arm. He's got good hands. And he improved his technique, I thought, in the short period of time that we had him. And he did a great job with the bat. So he looks to me like he's an average shortstop. He's got a good arm. Good hands, quick feet, pretty good base runner, and he can hit and hit for power. You know, he's had probably the third best year on the club behind Manny and Scope in terms of production, and he wasn't here that long.
Dan Duquette with us, our off-season debut of Hot Stove Baseball. One more segment to go. Stay with us on 105.7 The Fan.
Back to the Hot Stove Show on 105.7 The Fan. It's an hour-long look at baseball and the off-season trades and deals. Once again, live from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, here's Jim Hunter on The Fan.
And welcome back. We're at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, the Orioles Grill, second floor. Every Thursday we're going to be here until we head to Sarasota, so we hope you can come out and join us, as we had a nice crowd here tonight. We thank all the folks for coming out. And don't forget, you can escape the cold of winter when you book your official Orioles spring training travel package. It includes accommodations, a rental car, you get game tickets, team gear, an invitation-only VIP event, and more. For all the details and how to book your travel package, just get online, orioles.com/spring. Final segment with Dan Duquette on our off-season debut show. And Dan, I was listening to your cousin Jim Duquette on MLB Network Radio today while I was in the car, and he and his co-host were complaining that there's nothing going on in baseball. We're 2 months into the off-season, for us, not for you, and nothing's going on. What is holding up activity and player movement from your perspective?
Well, I mean, we had a great off-season, you know, in deference to Jim. I mean, it went to seven games of the World Series, right? And the Houston team had some really entertaining young ball players on it.
I think he meant post-World Series.
Oh, post-World Series? Yeah, because he was at the World Series. He was there covering all them games. But anyway, that Houston team was really good. You know, Altuve and Correa, those guys are worth the price of admission anytime. But, you know, I think a lot of clubs are waiting for find out what's going to happen with Ohtani.
Mm-hmm.
And then Yu Darvish, he's at the top of a lot of clubs' lists. So there's a couple of guys that have come over from the Japanese league to help add to the luster of our league. And I think a lot of clubs are waiting to see where that goes. And I got to tell you, I think the clubs did a really good job of signing a lot of their better players. A lot of the better players are sticking with their ball clubs, and they're not on the market at this time of year. So you have a lot of veteran pitchers after Yu Darvish that are on the market. And, you know, there's some other players on the market, but a lot of the teams are signing up their guys and they're staying with them.
And I know with the winter meetings coming up, you guys are always active in the Rule 5 draft. Do you envision yourself still being in that mode, or does having Santander for, I think it's the first 44 days of the season, alter your thinking at all?
Well, we took a couple of guys in the Rule 5 last year. I think that we'll probably take a look at the draft and see who's there and see who might be able to help us. It's always tempting to see if there's a pitcher out there that can help your ball club. And I think that's something that we'll probably look at very closely between now and the draft. Our guys like to dig in and see what they can find in that Rule 5 draft. And, you know, a lot of clubs take a look at that Rule 5 draft. We usually take a long look at it because we think it's a good way to add players to our organization. And we'll do the same thing this year, although I got to say I think we signed a couple of decent pitchers last week that were minor league free agents or 20D free agents that are coming into our major league camp, and we'll be able to take a look at those guys. I think our scouts and our front office people did a real good job getting these kids signed. Marinez, I like. I think he can help us. He's got some excellent pitches. He was one of the top guys we were looking at. And then we also looked to add to our left-handed pitching through that market, and we'll be able to take a look at a couple of guys in the spring there too.
We were also happy with the minor league signings. You were able to maintain the middle infield depth. I mean, there were three guys I thought maybe you might be able to bring one back, and you actually were able to bring all three.
Well, yeah, we got some middle infield depth. We got Tejada, who's coming back, and we had two other infielders from Venezuela. They'll be back in our program to support our major league team. So those guys will be helpful. And, you know, I like some of the depth of our minor league. You know, our minor leagues is back in vogue with a lot of the publications. So we got put Hunter Harvey on the roster. He's well-regarded. DJ Stewart had a great year last year, so he's back on people's radar screens. And those are two top picks that people had a lot of hope for. I know our people had a lot of hope for them when we drafted them. And they're back into the mix. Cedric Mullins, he and Stewart, those are two guys that we didn't have to put on the roster. But they're young outfielders that could have an impact on our team, and they'll be knocking on the door to help us next year in the spring. So, you know, along with Santander, who we'll take a look at in the big leagues, Austin Hayes. I kind of like the left-handed hitting Stewart, who was the number one pick. He's got all the tools. And then Mullins, probably the best outfielder of the group. He's the fastest guy we have in the organization. So we can take a look at him to help us next year. But the fact that we didn't have to put those players on the roster gives us a little bit more flexibility this time of year. And it's a good reflection on those players' skills that they got to AA. They established themselves at AA, especially Stewart, who had a great second half of the season. You know, and a lot of clubs are asking about him when they ask about players in the Oriole farm system. And, you know, we've got a couple of pitchers that are coming along. Tanner Scott had the great arm, and he was one of the best pitchers in the Arizona Fall League. We've got to get him to throw strikes more consistently. And Alex Wells, our minor league pitcher of the year, another left-hander.
Speaking of throwing strikes.
Yeah, that guy can throw more strikes than anybody that we have. But I wouldn't be surprised to see those guys make a contribution to our club next year. They're young. They have the talent. They have unique skills. And, you know, they're hungry to get to Baltimore and represent the club.
All right, final question. We have about a minute left. Tomorrow is the day for clubs to tender contracts to players or they become free agents. And every year it happens where a team fears the arbitration price may be too high, so they just let a player go. You happen to have open 40-man roster spots. Do you expect there might be some activity where the Orioles will see a player all of a sudden become free, and then that adds to your depth, and that's another avenue to go after?
Well, that's always a possibility. You know, David Ortiz was a player that
was
non-tendered.
That's exactly right.
And we tried to trade for him a couple times with the Red Sox because we saw him a lot, and then all of a sudden he was non-tendered, and we had picked up a minor league free agent, Brian Daubeck, who had a good career. He hit 20 home runs for 4 years in a row. And then after I left the Red Sox, when Ortiz was non-tendered, the Red Sox decided to non-tender Daubeck, and then they picked up Ortiz. So there'll be some good players available on that market. I don't think any of our players will be non-tendered and be in that market, but that's another way that we could add to the ball club.
Well, Dan, we appreciate you keeping the tradition going. Our first off-season show, you're always nice enough to come down and join us, and we'll look forward to talking to you quite a bit over our off-season, your busy season as you put this team together. And you intrigued me when you said we may see Alex Wells in 2018, because I don't care how old he is, a kid who throws strikes, and he's a lefty. Rock wants a lefty, and he's an Australian. Let's get the Aussie.
Well,
the only thing that would be better is if he was from New Jersey. That would be the only thing.
Well, you can adopt him if you want. I mean, you know.
We have nothing but room at the house.
This guy's got a good breaking ball, too. Pitching is about throwing strikes, and this guy can throw a lot of them.
All right, well, Dan, we appreciate the time. And, Rock, always good to be back with you, even though you missed half the show.
No, I was here. I heard it all, though.
Yeah.
That was important. I heard it all.
It wasn't nice of you to take a break in segment two. I mean, it's like you do one segment, you get tired.
Those short naps really help me. They freshen me up.
Well, we got to thank Tim Jones, who had a rough night here, and it's not his fault. You know, he hooks up all the equipment, and, you know, red goes in the red, orange in the orange, and unfortunately his box let him down. But he did a great job keeping us on the air, and we appreciate his efforts as well. And look, yes, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you all for coming out our season debut here at the Orioles Grill, Sheraton Inner Harbor. And again, we're going to be back here every Thursday right through February 22nd, except for Christmas week. And then the following week, that would be, let's see, two, carry the eight. The first show in March, Rock and I will be with Tim down in Sarasota, so we'll have a lot of fun there. So don't forget, next week, right here, live and in person, Trey Mancini will be with us for the hour next week. So we hope you can come back and join us and tune in. Coming up next on 105.7 The Fan, the Ken Wyman Show. Don't forget, you can follow Rock and all the rumors. He chases them down, believe me. MassinSports.com and 105.7 The Fan, the flagship for your Baltimore Orioles. So, again, thanks to Tim Jones and Kevin back in the studio. For Dan Duquette and Rock Cavaco, Jim Hunter saying so long from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor. We'll see you back here next week on 105.7 The Fan.